It is Sunday, June 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Coming up, it's the worst mass shooting in recent U.S. history. A gunman pledging allegiance to the Islamic State kills 50 people at a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. I'll bring you in-depth coverage, including my conversation with an Orlando reporter who tells us about the resilient mood of the city's people. I also speak with a terrorism analyst about why he sees such attacks as relatively rare for the United States. We also hear from a reporter in France about how violence at the European Football Championships is souring the country's mood. It's all ahead on International Edition. Well, U.S. officials are investigating Sunday's early morning shooting rampage in the city of Orlando as an act of terrorism. The gunman fired a barrage of bullets inside Pulse, a popular gay dance club, forcing people to drop to the floor and rush out through a back entrance during the club's Latin night. Renata Sago is a reporter for Central Florida's NPR station 90.7 News. She was at a blood bank and a musical performance organized by an LGBT group later on Sunday, and they asked her about the people's mood.
Very mixed reactions. You know, at the blood bank, it's a very packed area. You've got a line wrapping around the whole building. Folks' cars are parked in the grass, you know, off the side of the road, and people anticipate, neighbors anticipate, that a lot of those cars belong to some of the folks who were in the club at the time. But it's very busy at the blood bank, a lot of positive energy, solidarity. People are in line, they're waiting, they're aware that they'll be waiting for hours, but some people have hopped on board to donate pizza and snacks, granola bars, water, umbrellas, just anything that can keep people, their spirits lifted as they come together to help out. Here at the Orlando Repertory Theater, it's the same kind of vibe, obviously a somber kind of mood, but people are coming together. There's almost a feeling that the music from this event will provide a sort of healing sentiment. This is a very close-knit community, and a lot of people in the ensemble here, their friends attend Pulse regularly. Their friends were at the club last night. Some friends are even being hospitalized right now.
And about that blood bank that you also visited earlier today, what were authorities saying about the need for blood donations?
Well, there is a great need. One Blood, which is kind of one of the suppliers of plasma to Orlando Regional Medical Center, where a lot of the victims were rushed. A spokesperson there said that there is a very urgent need. They sent out the tweet. Media have been reporting, and folks started arriving at the blood bank as early as 9:30 a.m., 10 a.m., and around 2 p.m. they were still trying to give blood, those folks who had arrived as early as 10 a.m., I spoke with people in line. A lot of people came. They don't know their blood type. Some people did come knowing, and the O negative and O positive people, they were sent immediately into the blood bank. But one thing I will say is that the blood bank is not accepting the blood of men who do sleep with men, and so there was a bit of confusion over that.
In terms of the reaction that you've seen today from the people at the blood bank, at the a music event, how does that compare to anything you've seen in Orlando before?
Well, Orlando is a quite a bit of a transient place. It's a city that's coming into itself. It's affiliated with Disney, so a lot of times people come, they're trying to have a good time, they're trying to engage in the vacation of their dreams that they've been saving up for. But it's also a city that's coming into itself, and there are rare moments when you can see a true sense of community. So this sort of tragic incident has brought that together. It's brought people of different walks of life together in the same space. In that line at the blood bank, I saw people of all ethnicities, all sexual orientation. People are laughing, they're chatting, they're sharing their stories, they're crying together, and it's overall a feeling of togetherness.
Well, thank you very much to journalist Renata Sago in Orlando for bringing us a taste of the mood in Orlando today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, President Barack Obama has ordered U.S. flags to be flown at half-staff in memory of the victims of the Orlando shooting. Here's what he said earlier Sunday about the attack in an address to the American people.
This is a sobering reminder that attacks on any American, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation, is an attack on all of us and on the fundamental values of equality and dignity that define us as a country. And no act of hate or terror will ever change who we are or the values that make us Americans. Today marks the most deadly shooting in American history. The shooter was apparently armed with a handgun and a powerful assault rifle. This massacre is therefore a further reminder of how easy it is for someone to get their hands on a weapon that lets them shoot people in a school or in a house of worship or a movie theater or in a nightclub. And we have to decide if that's the kind of country we want to be. And to actively do nothing is a decision as well.
Well, President Obama has had to make a series of statements over the years after mass shootings in the U.S. I spoke to our Senate correspondent Michael Bowman today, and I asked him whether Obama's statement this time was any different.
The overall somber tone and the sense of sorrow was very familiar. President Obama called it an act of terror and an act of hate. This is perhaps, I think, the 15th time that he has come out and had to say something in the wake of a mass shooting event in this country. It is different, however, in that after previous shootings, he has issued very strong calls and demands that America address its gun laws. He didn't do that this time.
There was more of a measured reference to the controversial issue about gun violence, wasn't there?
Indeed. He said that America has to look at its gun laws and decide if this is the kind of country that we want to have. And that is very different from previous calls demanding change and saying that he would accept nothing other than change.
So why do you think that he decided to use a different tack today?
I suspect only President Obama knows the answer to that. However, having said these things in the past and having nothing to show for it, perhaps he decided that in the last year of his time in office, that a different tact, perhaps nudging rather than pounding the table and demanding, is the most appropriate course of action.
Do you think the fact that we're in a very heated presidential election season now also has something to do with it?
That is certainly within the realm of possibility. Any time that you have a tragedy and from that comes a call for a political result, it opens you up to the charge of politicizing what is a national tragedy. And he did face some of that criticism in the past, and perhaps he feels that in the heat of a presidential election, a national election, that is something to be avoided.
Well, in terms of the presidential candidates themselves, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump both tweeted about this shooting within the last couple of hours. And they both took a slightly different approach, you could say. Well, what was most significant, in your opinion, about what they said?
Hillary Clinton just issued a statement, and it very closely follows what President Obama said, almost to the choice of words. In Hillary Clinton's statement, she said this was an act of terror. This was also an act of hate. And that is almost word for word what President Obama said. Donald Trump issued several tweets. I'm just going to read a couple of them. Horrific incident in Florida, praying for all the victims and their families. When will this stop? When will we get tough, smart, and vigilant? And then in a different tweet, is President Obama finally going to mention the words radical Islamic terrorism? If he doesn't, he should immediately resign in disgrace.
I did see those. So that may not be too surprising from Trump, because he said similar things before, hasn't he?
He has. I think that there is a stark contrast between these two candidates in terms of the tone that they use and what they choose to highlight in the wake of this kind of a tragedy. But Donald Trump never shies from controversy, and some of those comments are receiving a fair amount of attention, both negative and positive, from some of his supporters.
happens.
Well, thank you very much to our Senate correspondent, Michael Bowman, for giving us an overview of the reaction to this tragedy in Orlando.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, it's time for a look at social media now, and I'm joined in the studio by our Lori London. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Michael. Well, as you can imagine, the Twitterverse is a nonstop conversation on this tragedy, especially with the hashtag Pulse Nightclub.
Well, there are many layers to this massacre. What are people saying about it?
Well, you're right. There are. Besides immense grief that people are expressing, they're also expressing a lot of views on guns, Islam, and gay rights. Edouard Samani writes, Islamophobia is not tolerated here with the hashtag gun reform now. But others, like at Robbie Travers, say radical Islam is peace. Tell that to the family of the 50 individuals murdered due to jihadism. And Real Rotation 27 writes, this is disgusting and abhorrent. I believe that this is not a Muslim issue, but rather a gun issue. How many people have to die? Cam VTV is angry at the president. She writes, Obama wants to get on TV and talk about guns while he floods my city with refugees who openly hate. Left Side Annie writes, disband that terrorist organization, the NRA, which is the National Rifle Association.
Well, a real diverse sense of views reflecting the general divisions in American society, it seems.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Lori. Thanks for giving us an update. And just a reminder to our followers that you can follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Well, here are some of the top stories right now in Asia. Taiwan's government has barred its former president, Ma Ying-jeou, from a visit to Hong Kong, citing security reasons and too little contact with Chinese authorities. In Shanghai, China, a man with homemade explosives injures three people at the city's main international airport. The Philippines' outgoing president cautions his fellow citizens to avidly defend their freedoms and democracy as a new tough-on-crime president is set to take over. And Al-Qaeda terror chief pledges support for the new Afghan Taliban militant leader. And finally, the International Labour Organization leads a global campaign to end the practice of child labour. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on voanews.com. This is International Edition. And International Edition continues. As we mentioned earlier, U.S. officials say the 29-year-old gunman who was killed by police at the scene pledged allegiance to the Islamic State in a 911 phone call while carrying out his rampage in Orlando. Max Abrams is a professor at Northeastern University focusing on terrorism. Speaking to me from Geneva, Switzerland, I asked him what he thinks about the way in which terrorism was quickly identified as a motive for the shooting.
Well, usually in such a situation, when there's an attack, people are very cautious about identifying the perpetrator. We refer to him, and it's usually a him, as a suspect. And we say that, you know, we don't know what the motives are, and we need more information. But in this case, the information seems a bit more reliable, coming as early as it has. Obama came out right away and said, this really looks like a terrorist attack. The guy, Omar Mateen, at least if reports are correct, called 911 to declare his allegiance to Islamic State. Islamic State has been calling even more than ever, perhaps because it's Ramadan, for these kinds of lone wolf attacks in the United States. The immediate targets were, you know, it was a homosexual bar, and so that's also in line with, you know, the kinds of targets that Islamic State would be interested in. And then furthermore, the organization itself has claimed credit for the attack, not just at a low level, but it's more official, you know, websites. So together, you put all this together, and if even half of these reports are true, it seems that this is at the very least an Islamist State-inspired lone wolf attack against a target which is ideologically at odds with, you know, the strict Salafist views of Islamic State.
Well, Max, there is some questioning going on as to whether the shooter was inspired by ISIS or actually a member of ISIS who had been recruited and trained and so on. How significant is that distinction?
Sure. Well, I do think that it's an important distinction to make. The United States has been blessed with a relatively content American Muslim community. And we don't often say that. You don't hear that enough. But the truth is that the American Muslim community is quite happy in the United States compared to other Muslim diaspora communities. And I think that's probably the main reason why the United States has supplied such a relatively small number of foreign fighters to join up with Islamic State. And so when we talk about, you know, lone wolf attacks at home, we're usually either talking about right-wing extremists or Islamists who have simply been inspired, perhaps over social media, by Islamic State. We're not seeing, many foreign fighters who left from the United States, say, joined up with Islamic State in Syria, and then returned to the United States. I don't know actually of a single case like that. Whereas Europe is dealing, you know, with a more severe problem because we have hundreds and hundreds of foreign fighters who are returning to, you know, France and Germany and the UK. And so that is a more severe problem.
Well, thank you very much to Max Abrams, a professor at Northeastern University in Boston who specializes in terrorism. Thanks for speaking to International Edition.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
This is VOA.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. European soccer's governing body UEFA is threatening the English and Russian football federations with being expelled from the Euro 2016 championships, which are now underway in France. The threat follows an outbreak of violence between English and Russian fans in the French city of Marseille, where their teams played to a 1-1 draw on Saturday. Daniel Brown is a reporter who has worked for Radio France International based near Paris. I asked him just how bad the fan violence was.
Oh, it got pretty ugly. There were 35 people injured in Marseille, four of them seriously, two are really in critical condition. On top of that, in Nice, there's been further fighting between fans of Northern Ireland and local French people. 10 people were arrested in Marseille, which is quite puzzling when you see the hundreds of people involved. There was a rather puzzling lack of rigor and coordination from the authorities, which seemed to allow this violence to just drag on for a couple of days, especially when you know that Marseille has seen similar ugly scenes back in 1998 when England this time played Tunisia. And the French had been warned of this potential flashpoint. But alcohol was being sold quite freely, and the old port at the heart of the city just saw these pitch battles between English, Russian, and French fans.
Well, how would you say this fan violence is affecting the overall mood in France, considering you also have ongoing labor strikes, which some pilots of Air France have just joined.
Yes, pilots, and there's also the garbage people that are have decided to, garbage companies have decided also to slow down their in their work, although the pickets have been a bit less draconian in the last couple of days. There's a general feeling of malaise and, I'd say, depression in France, that and this backdrop is important to underline. There's this new labor legislation which is causing all this these strikes that was introduced by this new Minister for Labor, Miriam El-Khomri, at the beginning of this year. And it's definitely, I think, aroused a lot of animosity and anger for a government which is hugely unpopular. I mean, François Hollande's his standing, his ratings have gone down to 16%. That's the worst for any French president since World War II. His prime minister is down to 26%. There's a feeling of betrayal in general, a reneging of promises. Unemployment is still almost at 10%. That's over 5 million people. And you get these popular expressions like Nuit Debout, which I suppose the nearest equivalent in the U.S. is Occupy Wall Street, which are continuing, even if they're still marginal. But they reflect a growing anger from a population that doesn't find any expression in the politics of the day, in the political parties that are traditionally there dominating the political scene.
Okay, well, let's see if that mood continues as the Euro 2016 tournament progresses. But thanks very much to reporter Daniel Brown for speaking to International Edition from near Paris this evening.
Thank you to you. Thanks.
And that is it for International Edition on the Voice of America. Your director today was Tracy Carter. The engineer was Daryl Smith. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. You can find me on Twitter at @Michael_Lippin. And the show is there, too, at @VOA_IE. Have a great week.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A little more than 25 years ago, Mongolia started down the path of democracy. Since then, the U.S. has actively supported the transition process with projects through the Millennium Challenge Corporation, including a $285 million compact that has helped to build roads, promote health care and education, among other things. On a recent visit to Mongolia, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry stressed the importance of attracting foreign investment to the country. He said there's more we can do to open up the economy. There's more we can do to get transparency and accountability in place, push back against whatever corrupt practices may have existed from old times into the present, and begin to modernize, create rules of the road which will attract private capital. Implementing the U.S.-Mongolia Bilateral Transparency Agreement will go a long way toward creating the conditions favorable to foreign investment. In a meeting with Mongolian entrepreneurs, civic leaders, and political activists, Secretary Kerry announced a $2.5 million program under the U.S. Agency for International Development to help advance the democratic process. The grant will also help to provide materials to schools that will assist them in teaching their students to understand how free markets and democracy work. The United States values Mongolia's growing participation on the international scene. Mongolia has committed peacekeeping troops to Sudan, South Sudan, and elsewhere. Mongolian troops have also been serving alongside American soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq. Most recently, the U.S. and Mongolia co-sponsored the Conquest Exercises, which bring together more than 40 nations and 2,000 participants to improve peacekeeping practices and tactics. In an effort to improve people-to-people ties, the U.S. is working to make it easier for Mongolian businessmen, students, and tourists to obtain visas. The U.S. will also continue to support its highly successful Peace Corps program in Mongolia. "The bottom line is very simple," said Secretary Kerry. "Mongolia has made remarkable progress for a young democracy. The U.S. is committed to doing all it can to see that progress continue."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.